Hey there, you're listening to CKUT 90.3, and we are back with Girls Meet World. Unfortunately, it's actually only two girls today, but we'll have a more proper formal introduction soon.
Yeah.
So here we are, we're back on campus, back to discuss important issues. Like the latest TikTok trend that we don't agree with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is what the show is all about.
That's what it's all about, though.
You know, being a digital citizen and, you know, being a young woman has changed these last few years. It's
gotten worse.
Yeah. Have you seen the Barbie movie?
Of course I saw the Barbie movie.
There's something about America Ferrera's speech where I was just like, she gets it.
She does get it. And yet, can I say something? Okay. The first time I watched the movie, I don't think I understood what was going on. Because the common critique that people said for it was, it's such like a surface level grasp on feminism. And like when I first watched it, I was like, yeah, like her speech, like as great as it was, as groundbreaking as it would be for, I don't know, the child next to me or the man next to me. For me, it was like, well, yeah, like this is like, that is how it is. And then, of course, on my second watch, which I did see it two times.
I was like, it's a good movie. You should watch it two times.
I was like, you know, the whole idea is that obviously she's a doll and she's never seen this before. And it's the fact that we need to have a movie at least that exists, that it is just starting from the basics. Because not everybody is like a master's in gender feminist studies and all
that. Yeah. And let's be honest, it's very hard to introduce like intersectionality in a movie about, you know, a doll. Because just a baseline message, a lot of people did not get it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this movie was for you to like, you know, get your, it's feminism 101 for the people who need it. But yeah.
You know, a common critique I heard for it, though, as well, and this was more or less in, like, not, like, in the North American kind of side, it was that it's making people hate being a girl. Because it's already saying, like, it's not showing, like, the more power. And feminism's showing, like, the world is turned to hate you, and it's like, well, why would we want to show this to kids? It's just showing to girls that they shouldn't want to be themselves. Which, I mean, you could take it that way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. It's like people who had that interpretation of, like, the Kens were weak and, you know, like, Ken and Barbie didn't end up together. So, like, what is this?
Yeah,
and
it's so
like,
what's the point?
It's like, I don't know, media literacy.
But, you know, it's like I said, like, it's good at least to have a movie that was so, I mean, what is it now? Like, it made like $1 billion.
It made like $1 billion. Yeah.
Like $1 billion.
A barbillion.
That's my new like monetary scale.
Yeah.
That's like a bar billion right there.
Yeah.
I love that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That was a nice way to start the show. This is Girls Meet World.
Girls Meet World. Yes. Barb's Meet World.
Barb's Meet World.
We might have to change it. Limited edition.
Who knows? But yeah, we're going to start off with a song. Kat, do you want to introduce it?
Oh, yeah, I will. This is a song by Crystal Waters. It's called 100% Pure Love. I took it from my show, my favorite show, RuPaul's Drag Race. But it's great, and I hope you guys like it too.
Yeah, so let's get to hearing it.
Play it.
Again, no, it's not a sin. I'll show you how to win.
I love that song so much.
And we're back.
And we are back.
Girls Meet World. It feels so weird to say it because like Adele and Zoe aren't there.
I know.
And we haven't introduced ourselves.
Yeah, we haven't introduced ourselves. So it's just like we're literally just girls who are in the world. That could be literally anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
do you want to do a quick intro?
Should we do it? Okay.
We should.
You know what? You go first. I'll let you.
Okay. So my name is Carla. I would give my last name, but like, I don't know. That feels, I don't want to say it's too personal, but there's something weird about giving your full name.
Yeah. It's like a little bit like, it's just a show. It's not the government. It's not your passport.
Yeah. So my name is Carla. I'm 21.
Ooh.
Which feels weird because mentally I feel like I'm still 19.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm a third-year student at McGill. It's my final year. I study political science, communications, and history because I was very unsure what I wanted to do. So it's like I'm going to do the most majors and minors as possible.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm from Montreal. I've actually been doing Off the Hour Friday alone during the summer while you guys were on vacation. And that was a great experience, but I'm so happy to be back in the studio with Kat. Yay. And like when all the girls are going to be back. Because I've missed it. Like
there's a lot to say now. After a summer of being gone, there's too much to unpack.
Yeah.
That one can't do alone.
Yeah, and like doing the show alone gets really weird because like you're just having a conversation with yourself and you're asking these rhetorical questions that like no one is here to answer.
No one's here to answer. Yeah. I really wish I should have listened because I would have been there right when the phone could ring and I would have asked a ton of questions and responded back. I would have. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Me. My name is Kat. I am from Mississauga, Ontario, and I'm in my second year here at McGill now, which feels even crazier to say, actually, because I feel like I just started. I'm studying international development with minors in communication and art history, which I actually just chose randomly.
History?
Art history, yeah.
You know, I was very much, I don't know why there was a section of while I was at McGill, I was like, why don't I be an art history major?
Yeah.
Like, cause you know, at the beginning you're like, you take one class and you're like, exactly. I should switch my major. And then you think about it and you're like,
better not.
Better not.
I didn't have that better not feeling. And I think and my friends from first year can attest to this, I went through about 15 different majors. There was a really, really strong point where I was going to be a geography major. I don't know anything about geography. I took one geog class, which you could basically say was political science.
Me, it was history.
Yeah.
I took my first ever history class. The material was, but I remember there was a cute guy in my class, and I was like, if I take more history classes, I might run into him. Thank God I didn't change for that. But then I took more, like, Canadian history class, and I was like, what if I became a double major in political science and history, which thank God I didn't, because so much reading and writing.
Too much.
Too much. And, yeah, I mean, we all have the phases where we're like, I should, you know, drop out and become an engineering major.
Oh exactly. I think the problem is I'm way too easily swayed. Yeah. Way too easily. I like, you know, people talk, oh, what can influencers really do? I'm very easily influenced. Pretty much anything somebody says to me, I could easily be convinced. I'm not strong in my convictions at all. Tomorrow, if I started, like, who knows, economics class, I could probably, like, gaslight myself into thinking that's possible for me, which is not.
Yeah. Multiple. I've thought of that because my friend would be, I remember I have a friend who's in finance. Mm-hmm. She needed help with, like, an assignment. It was for an English class. She's like, you know, I have this really big essay to write. And I'm like, okay, I'll help you. She's like, okay, so it's 1,250 words. And I'm like, that's a big assignment for you? Like, that to me is, like, you know, that's, not even
that's
a midterm.
Baby food here. That's baby food here.
Okay? It's baby that's, food. It's like, you know, your first.
That's week two.
That's a week two assignment.
Discussion post.
Yeah. And then I was like, what if I became a finance major? And then I thought about it. I'm like, finance bros, no.
No. See, well, yeah.
Yeah.
No one talks about sometimes how the demographic in your class actually can steer you away. Just about being in management. Sometimes I'm like, is that for me? Because who would I talk to?
I think one of the things I love about comms, because we're both like comms minor, when you walk into class and it's like majority woman and you're like, this is great.
Don't get me started on the demographic of an art history class, because I'll tell you, I don't have to say it out loud what it is and what it looks like, but it's just positive vibes in there. Everyone's having fun. Everyone, guess what? If you need a pencil, someone's not going to, like, be afraid to give you one.
Yeah.
Everyone's just, you say hi to your neighbor. Everyone's dressed in floral. It's just a great time.
A great time.
Even the teacher, she's dressed in floral too. Yeah. We're all just having, like, a girl party. And yeah, and that's what it's all about.
You know, and I was going to say, history class, it depends on the class, mm-hmm. but I feel like most of the people I've met in my history class have been very respectable people
who
have very, like, good in-depth thoughts about the material.
I trust history majors. I really do.
Yeah. And then you'd go to, like, I'm going to slander this class, Poly 210. Then you go to Introduction to Political Theory, and you're in your conference section, and you hear a man say, I'm going to compare slaves to serial killers. And you're like,
Was this an actual?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay.
In case you need to know, he was from Southern Ontario. And everyone I've told this story to, when I was like, oh, they were like, where was he from? And I'm like, Southern Ontario. And they're like, that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that's adding up.
Yeah.
As someone who's from Southern Ontario, I can attest to that. That is true.
And it's like, I get what you were. He was basically trying, because we were studying.
Oh, to play devil's advocate?
No. We were studying. It's not John Locke. We were studying. I forgot what his name is, but he's very influential. And he basically had this supposition of, like, everyone is born free and you choose to be a slave. Like, unless you're, like, physically castrated, there's a way for you to be free. And he was trying to argue that, like, oh, well, it's kind of like the nurture versus nature debate that people have with serial killers. And, like, I get what you're trying to say, but maybe you are not the best person to make that point.
Not the time.
So when I took a Black Politics in Canada class, which I'm currently taking, and I'm also taking BLM in American Democracy, I walked in and there were, like, five Black people in the class. And I was like, this is the most Black people I've seen in the class in McGill.
Do we even know? I think I did a paper on affirmative action last year, and the numbers are shockingly low.
Yeah.
Especially for faculty.
Yeah.
I'm not going to remember off the top of my head, but it was close to, like, it was like they said it was the combination of Black and Indigenous faculty members is something like 1.16.
And most of them were hired after 2020.
Oh, really? Yeah. Are you serious?
Yeah. My Black Politics in Canada teacher, he's like, I was hired after George Floyd happened, because then the school had to do an investigation and they had to commit to having a more diverse, diverse professors, because, like, the record of, POC professors was like,
yeah.
Yeah. it was not good. So they had to hire more of them. And so they hired him. They hired another professor that I have. She was hired because of that policy.
It's, you know,
same thing with women. There aren't that many, like, depending on what field you're in.
Yeah.
I'd say poly, it's 50-50. History, I think it depends on like what branch of history, but I'm sure that if you go in STEM, it's probably like very white.
I would not be able to tell you.
Very male, very white. I don't know. I've never taken a STEM class. I'm steering clear of STEM. I was not good in math. I was not good in science. And yeah.
You know, I don't know how it would feel as a professor to know that you're being hired as a little bit of like kind of a lottery thing. Kind of being like, okay, am I here like as a, to cross some boxes off?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, okay, well, at least it's like an attempt at trying.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, I'm going to paraphrase my one of my professors, but she's, because I remember at the end of like the first lecture, the first class, she was like, oh, do you guys have any questions for me? And I think someone's, because she works a lot about in activism and, you know, in black studies and trying to push forward, you know, like, I don't know how to explain it, but she works very actively in the black community and trying to, you know, like push out that. And someone asked her like, oh, what motivates you every morning to, you know, come to McGill and teach this class? And I think she said, you know, in this class, I probably have future lawyers, future lawmakers, people with influence. And I'm trying to plant a seed in you of like, you know, the world is wrong and I have to go out and change it. So I think for a lot of them, it's like, okay, I am, you know, like a token hire. But if I can at least influence people into, you know, thinking more diversely and in, you know, believing in, you know, equality, maybe it's worth it. I don't know. I'm not a prof, so I could never say, but I believe that a lot of them even, they know that they're being a token hire, but it's like, listen, if I can influence like one kid who goes on to be, I don't know, leader of the official opposition, it's going to be worth it.
Exactly. I think it was something... It's even just the idea of being up there. I had read this article last year that was explaining the idea of like based on neocolonialism, the fact that like, you know, as a student, when you look up to the front of the class and who you see there, it's even unconsciously, you are taking that person as the be all and end all of knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, you trust them so much, you totally believe, even if it's a horrible professor, you understand that they're masters in their field and you trust what they say, at least in some way, or at least you want to respect them enough to do well on their exams. And so it really does matter who is up there and who is teaching it. It's unconsciously, you're going to, you know, so of course, if it's the idea that it's always going to be a white man who's up there teaching, then it's basically explaining that they are masters even, well, that was part of it that, these men, especially white men, were professors in studies that weren't even about them. It was something like Middle Eastern studies or like, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which is basically trying to say that a white man, even in this case, knows more.
I will say, I do appreciate that most of the classes that I've taken that are about like a specific geographical area or like a community, it's been a person of that community teaching it. I don't know if you've taken Middle Eastern politics.
Next semester.
Okay. Daniel Dweck. He's from, I think, South Africa.
Is he really?
I think so. He's Muslim. But, you know, he has experience, you know, in the area. I have a black professor for black politics, which I know it's like the bar is low, but like at least that I have a black professor for, you know, BLM and American democracy. So I appreciate that. I took Russian politics and I had a professor who lived.
How was that? That looks really interesting.
It actually was really interesting. It wasn't so much as like the class was not pro-Russia.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very much like you're analyzing how Russia got to the point that it is now.
Yeah.
And it was very focused on economics because my teacher, her specialty was like Russian economics. And, you know, when they went from, you know, command economy to capitalism.
Yeah.
It was great. Honestly, I think it helped me better understand, you know, why Russia invaded Ukraine, because you go from like, okay, so we start at, you know, the Soviet Union, this happened, and, you know, we had like guest lecturers who would come and, you know, teach. It actually was a really good class. I just did not like the way that she did her exams, but like, you know, she lived in Russia for several years. Yeah, so
exactly, having somebody who's an expert in the field understands it from, you know, God, there was a word that we got taught. Nothing useful going in this head this week. Basically about how what it's, you know, you can understand things from an outsider perspective, and then there's certain things that you can obviously only understand being within the community. So even if you're a master in your field, you're always going to have an outsider's perspective, no matter how. So, of course.
And I will say, the profs that I've had, they've been very, like, I don't think liberal is the right word, but they've been very, like, aware
We'll say like, liberal. We'll say liberal.
Yeah, they've been very aware of, like, the material that they're teaching. So, you know, like, I've had, you know, I took Travis Bruce, which, controversial, depending on who you ask. But, you know, he was, like, aware of, like, you know, I'm a white man teaching you about the Haitian Revolution.
Yeah. See, to what extent do you want your professor to stress how woke they are? Because I don't want to, like, name names, but I had a professor the other day for one of my history classes, and he wanted us to make sure that at the first intro class, where, you know, usually you go over the syllabus, what's the midterm going to look like, he wanted to stress for around 40 minutes, oh, he's woke. He is awake and knows what's going on here. We had to... if I say this, it's going to get way too like specific, and you will know who I'm talking about. But, you know, to what extent do you want that? It's like, is it like a side note kind of thing, or is there something dedicated to, you know, before you begin the class, is it worth getting into that? Like, so you know that it's all going to be coming from that perspective.
I think it depends. Like, I'm taking Black Politics and, you know, BLM. At both classes, the teacher began by saying, this is not a question of, does racism exist? It's not a question of, like, is structural racism an actual thing? In my class, I don't want to hear, you know, to play devil's advocate. The devil has enough advocates. He does not need another lawyer.
That's a fantastic sentence.
They both said that exact same sentence, and I'm like, I am stealing that.
That is going to be used. That is crazy.
Yeah, good. And, you know, I think if you start off by the jump of saying, like, you know, I don't know, I'm taking a class on, like, I don't know, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and I'm being told that it's taught from the point of view of, like, I don't know, not Israel.
Yeah.
I think, like, that's enough of a caveat. Like, I don't know. If you're taking a Black Politics class, I don't think you can go in with the expectation of, like, does racism exist? Because, like, your class is called Black Politics. I think from the jump, you have the understanding of, like, racism exists. And so we're going to analyze how these people... I don't think you need an entire lecture, but I think just like from the jump, just saying like, hey,
I just feel like it left us at a very odd place though, because I was looking around and like my classmates are looking and it's like, well, he basically explained, even at the end, he was like, he did explain. And what I thought was nice is that he's going to bring in guest lecturers into the ones like, again, like the Haitian Revolution. He was like, you know, there's a fantastic professor here who's specialized in it. She grew up there. She understands it. So of course I appreciate that. But in some ways it was like, so why are you teaching it? started naming every lecture that someone new is going to come and help us this. And I was like, so what will you be teaching?
Yeah.
And then it's just I don't know. It left us like, I was just like, well, are you discrediting yourself at the same time? Like that in some ways that yes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm not gonna lie. I would write that in the teacher evaluation at the end of the semester because it's anonymous. So I'd be like, you know, I liked your class, but you know, yeah.
No, seriously, it was fine. And you know what? I guess maybe, you know, I don't know this guy's past. Maybe he's been accused of something in the past and he's really trying to like
cover his back.
Yeah, a little bit that. Yeah. So who knows? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
But we were
Bama Rush.
So
Bama Rush.
With coming, what a crazy flip we're going into.
Yeah.
But it all relates to school. And being back. And with coming back and starting a new year is rushing. Frats and sororities.
Did you watch the documentary?
There's a documentary?
There's a documentary on HBO and people were really excited for it because they were like, oh, it's because they were talking about The Machine, which caveat. So there's this thing in apparently, listen, I don't plan on ever joining a sorority, so I don't care if I'm like blowing all these secrets. Okay. Just full
disclosure. Blowing your chances at getting into Delta Kappa. Phi Fi Fo, like, I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into, like, Kappa Delta.
Shoot! It's over.
Yeah, it's over. I mean, like, there's no, like, historically black. I mean, there are, like, in the U.S., I don't think there are any in Canada.
There's definitely not any at McGill.
Not that, yeah. Anyway. I'm not planning on joining a sorority. So, there's this thing, apparently, called The Machine, which is a bunch of selected members from certain fraternities and sororities. And they basically have a whole lot of power on campus, on, like, the social agenda. Apparently, they have some decision-making in, like, policy at the university, on, like, parties and stuff like that. And they mentioned The Machine in the trailer. So, people were like, oh, my God, this is gonna be an expose. This is going to be a tell-all. Mm-hmm. And then they watched the documentary, and apparently, it was just, like, the filmmaker talking from her perspective of like her feeling like she was bullied by people in a sorority and it wasn't giving you know, like an inside glimpse into how sorority are. So we were like, wow, this was really like a missed opportunity.
It is a missed opportunity because I'm telling you the psyche that I see some of these girls get into on TikTok, don't know them personally, but I have been following quite intensely.
Yeah.
It's insane. You would think this was a life or death kind of matter here.
Yeah.
Like the excitement that they get to even get this letter, you're seeing them, they're shaking and trembling, opening the, and I don't even think it matters what the letter is going to say. The fact that they're in or not is enough for them to, sometimes I feel like it's the equivalent to like the acceptance to the university letter rather than a, I don't know. At the same time, look, I had this conversation with a girl here, and I know sororities can't be compared to the way they are in America. It's just not the same at all. Yeah. And the culture is totally different. But I had a conversation with a girl here, a girl who's in a McGill sorority here. And from what I've heard, the community and the network is extremely intense and very beneficial for people.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're going into it for the network and the beautiful career opportunities.
And the sisterhood.
Something, there's something else that we need to have a federal investigation on, because it's just, it can't like be understood. And the rituals, especially frats. Now sororities, like, I don't think you hear more about them, but men can be evil. Girls can be evil, but
I mean, sororities are also like inherently like more police, like they police your behavior a lot more than frats do. Because it's a whole thing of like, you know, if say you're taking a picture and you have a red Solo cup, you have to hide it.
See, I did see that. Yeah.
Because if you don't hide it, you're going to get a call from like a person at the sorority and you're going to have a hearing on like your conduct. And, you know, if you go to a party, you can have fun. But if you have too much fun and you're being sloppy and I don't know,
you're there to represent something at the same time.
Yeah. And you're, and we see you making out with like Travis from like Beta Phi. You're gonna get a call, whereas like Travis, no one cares. It's like, oh, okay, you scored. That's great.
Yeah, no, but it is policed. It's very true. I'm trying to think of something else. There was, now I don't know if this is McGill specific, but I think like you said about the policing, there is something also about like the type of post they can make. Like, there's no like it in a, especially if I'm assuming it's at Bama, the amount of skin you're showing is gonna that's gonna be limited.
Yeah,
when you're, especially if you're high up, one of the treasury chair. I have no idea, girl.
Chair of like social events.
Sure, her. She can't wear short shorts. That is for sure.
Yeah,
that's not happening, and she's not allowed to post it either.
And I mean, just the stories that I've heard of, like, you know, say you're at a party and you're talking with a guy, and turns out it's the ex boyfriend of the chair of events. So now you're getting, you know, like blackballed.
Is that really true?
Yeah,
this is craziness.
Apparently, it's like a thing of like, say, I don't know, you're talking to a guy who dated someone high up in your sorority and she's not over it. And like, they can not get their revenge on you, but like, you'll be like a little bit blacklisted.
Yeah. Oh no. You'll be a lot of bit blacklisted.
And like, they're going to police your behavior a whole lot more. So say you're at like a party and you take a picture and there's a red Solo cup and it's not just you, there's like other people, like they're going to come hard on you and not on the other people. And I'm like, why would you want to put yourself in that situation?
You know, in some ways it's like, okay, like, as debilitating as that sounds, I don't think it can even begin to compare to what I've heard from frat initiations, which is just absolutely insane. And that I understand even less.
Yeah.
Because girls, we naturally do want to have that sisterhood. I know that sounds so stupid, but community
is sisterhood and wanting to be a part of something bigger than yourself.
That is very common just for a girl in general. So I get what the sorority sells. You're selling a certain status, and I understand that
And to add to it,
please,
because, you know, from what I've heard of what people have said at certain universities, if you're not in a sorority, you're missing out on social life. Like, there aren't that many parties going on, because, you know, like, sororities, for frats, they can secure the alcohol. They can secure, you know, whatever you need to have a party. Whereas, like, here, like, the drinking age is 18. Exactly. Nothing is stopping you from, like, going to, like, Couche-Tard and, like, buying beer or going to the SAQ. I don't even get carded anymore when I go to the SAQ. Like, no one cares. And people here, you've been partying since you're, like, 16. Yeah. So by the time you're, like, 21, 22, you're kind of, I'm partied out. Like,
I'm partied out. I had the years, like, actually, I'm not going to say that on here.
but, you know, like, by the time you get to like the age that people in the US drink, you're kind of like, you know what? I don't need to go out every single night to like get shit face drunk.
Yeah.
I think I'm just going to stay in and do my reading for tomorrow.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's like a phase of your life where I was like, and I think you see it here, because I remember during Frosh, the people who were getting the most like drunk were the Americans.
Exactly. Because they're so not used to it. And I think that's, you know what? That's a fantastic point, because I think what they're able to provide in the U.S. is the fact is that the drinking age is 21. It's not fucking easy to go and go buy something. Like, you gotta really work for that. If you want, like, you have to make some serious connections. You gotta make some serious bribes. Some begging has to go on. Like,
yeah,
crazy shit to end up with what? Like a six pack?
A six pack.
So I think I understand it there, but like, I don't know that, like, some of the things, like, especially guys, and guys just, you know, everything's part of the macho ordeal and everything. And, like,
yeah,
there's even one, but this isn't even the U.S. So this one, I don't know how this works, because then I don't understand the incentive here. This was at Western. I heard this from somebody, that this was to get into a frat at Western. You know, a porta potty. You are shoved into a porta potty. You are forced to be naked and wearing women's underwear or something. You're forced into a porta potty, and you have to finish an entire Jack Daniels something.
Like a bottle?
Yeah, like, yeah, a bottle. Until you're done, you're not coming out of that porta potty. And that's it. Like, already, that's a tame one.
Yeah.
Compared to some other stuff I heard, that's super tame.
Yeah, I've heard, did you hear the one of, oh my God, I think his name was Tim LaPiazza, the one who, basically, they made him, like, I think, drink, like, a whole jug of, like, some type of alcohol that was, like, really, really strong. And I think now he's, like, disabled and, like...
Christ. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You know...
I think it was at Penn State.
Yeah.
And, like, Penn State is a big party school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's the thing I don't get, because I'm, like, oh, Penn State, you don't really need to be in a... Like, it's a party school.
Yeah.
It's, like, you know, I get it if you're, like, at a small college where, you know...
Yeah, and there's nothing else to do and you need to have that outlet. But, like, what is the point there? The drinking culture, and you know what? I think this could even be said universally for, like, North American schools. The drinking culture is insane here.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this as someone who's going to OAP after this.
I've yet to go to OAP.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Tonight's the last night. You need to go.
You know what? I think I'll... I don't know, because I've always been wanting to go with my friends, but none of my friends are ever available. Because my friends have gone in previous years, so they're like, we don't need to go to OAP. Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? Worst case, I'll just go to the one at the end of the year.
There is the one at the end of the year. That's true. But tonight's the last one for, like, the beginning of summer.
Who knows? I might go.
Who knows?
I don't know. I should probably turn my phone off, because, like, I've been getting notifications like crazy. And you can actually
probably someone asking you to go to OAP. This is an unpaid advertisement.
Actually, no. It's someone asking me to review the product that I bought online on their store.
So basically the same thing.
Yeah.
Literally the same thing. But yeah.
Yeah, fraternities.
Fraternities, sorry. Back to serious business. Unpacking the fraternity incentive. There was one I heard that I just... Even just because it's so grotesque, I don't even want to get into it. But this is a story of... One of my friends, well, let's not call him that, a classmate from high school,
yeah,
who goes to Arizona State.
Oh, God.
I don't, like, it's just, it's...
I heard ASU, and I'm like, this is not going to...
Already, it's not good.
No.
It's not good. It's just not good stuff. And the initiation, and the thing is, I think here's the best part, too, is that there's no shame after the what they have to do to get this. And yeah, I'm going to tell you the story, and it's going to be horrible, and it'd be the kind of thing that one could almost classify as PTSD, and you would need, like, intensive therapy and, I don't know, sleepless nights involved.
But I think that's kind of the thing with men. They tend to, like, shut off.
Well, now we're getting into something.
Because I remember, like, my ex-boyfriend, one time I was talking to him, and yeah, he said something really traumatic that happened to him in his childhood, and he just, like, brushed it off, and I'm like...
Yeah.
Jay, that's not normal.
Yeah.
Like, you should talk to someone. He's, yeah, like, oh, no, it's fine. I'm over it. It was just, like, you know, like, a thing that happened. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You don't get it. That's not normal. Like, you can't be just... You need to go be in therapy, because, like, this is... But, like, that's, like, the thing of, like, being a man is, like, you know...
Yeah, it's a typical... Like, and I don't understand, because this is again, not to bring it full circle here, this is why Ken cried.
Yeah.
Because this is why... There's something wrong. Like, I, you know, it's exactly what you said. They're bringing up very traumatic things that need to be processed. And when they, you know, at one point, it's just ultimately going to resurface later in your life. And then, yeah, you're going to have to deal with it then. But the guy, like, guys seriously don't know or don't have at least the tools to talk about it.
I mean, also, sometimes when they do talk about it, they're, like, made a mockery of.
Yes.
Like, do you know the amount of stories that you hear of, like, I don't know, 14-year-old was seduced by his teacher. And, yeah, then you go to the comment section, it's like, oh, he's lucky.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't have snitched. I would have loved for that to happen.
Exactly.
And it's like, that's...
Standard is incredible.
I hate to say it was a girl, but, like, if it was a girl,
like,
people would be like, send that guy to jail and,
yeah,
like, throw away the key
immediately. It's always like the guys, like middle-aged men with like their selfie is like they just in their profile picture.
Yeah, with
like
the sunglasses,
a little bit of stubble, and going like, this would have been my dream. Can I be this kid? What are you talking about? Yeah. He was assaulted. Like, it's craziness like that. And it's just, I don't know. I had another point, but I got really caught up.
But fraternities, they tend to induce that PTSD. Yeah. And where they do trim, like the amount of stories I've heard of like fraternity, like, you know, Penn State or this fraternity that happened where they're like suing them. And I'm like, how did no one here step out for a minute to touch grass and say, hey, maybe this is a bit too extreme? But like, no, I think it's that like groupthink mentality of like, everyone's endorsing it. So,
well, see, that's what I was going to say, is that it's just it's this huge sacrifice for this camaraderie, and you don't care. You're so willing to be a part of it that you, like, even if you're going to suffer, it's like, well, we all suffered together, so it's okay. So here's a story, actually, now that I say that.
Trigger warning.
Huge trigger warning. Actually, no, it's more just gross rather than it is like, but this is something that, you know, this is something that you take to the grave. Yeah. This is not something, the thing is that he was sharing this proudly. I'm not even totally close friends with this guy, and yet I know the story. So that should speak to this. What do you call like the higher members in the frat? Like the
upperclassmen, like something like that?
Something like that? The chair of the frat? That's not a thing.
We're not in sororities.
Disclaimer.
We don't have the lingo.
Hopefully next year, though. We're hoping to rush. Fingers crossed, I'll make it. The higher upperclassmen, whatever, I'm so sorry for this. They put their shit in a bag. And
did
all
they have to eat it?
Yup.
Ugh.
Yup.
Yeah.
And the way he expressed the story was so like, meh, I had to do it, but it brought us closer together. No, you ate a man's shit.
That's not a bonding exercise.
No, it is not. But this is what I'm saying, is that this is something you take to the grave.
Yeah.
You do not tell anybody this. I should not be like, in terms of like the sixth degree of separation to this guy, I should not know this story.
Yeah.
And yet I know it. And now it's on the air. So there, think about that. If you're out there listening and you are from Mississauga, and he's definitely not listening, but one day, who knows?
You know, I've thought of that. Sometimes I'm like, if I say something really personal about someone, will they hear this? And I think most of the time the answer is like, unless they go searching for it. No.
Unless they go searching for it. But there are haters out there.
Yeah.
You never know. There are haters.
Yeah.
So, sorry, haters.
Did you follow, what's her name, Morgan?
Morgan. She's one of these.
One of the girls who was rushing.
Yeah.
And people thought
if you describe her, it's not going to help either.
So basically, she was one of the girls that were rushing, and she looks like a normal person, and she very much is like a normal person. Like, her mom has a regular job. Her parents aren't like, you know, the like lawyer I don't know, like Hobby Lobby. Like they have very like normal job. Okay. Like her mom works at like Vineyard Vine.
Okay.
And, you know, so she was talking and she's like, okay, so this is my outfit. My t-shirt is from Gap. Yeah. My shorts are from Old Navy. You know, relatable. Yeah. And she had her bag that her mom got for her, her rush bag. And she was like crying. She was like, you know, my mom worked so hard. None of my parents went to college and I'm the first person in my family. And also she's not, you know, thin blonde. What do you expect of a sorority? There and she got dropped.
No, are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's horrid.
Yeah, so then people were like, oh, you know, sororities. And it's like, and people are trying to defend sorority, being like, oh, well, you know, maybe in her chats she wasn't that good. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know why you would want so bad to be a part of this thing that's so exclusionary. But maybe that's like the thing. It's like, oh, I'm part of this very exclusive thing.
Exactly. It's reinstating what university doesn't have that high school has, which is very comforting for some people. It can be. Some people want to escape
from hierarchy.
Exactly. A social hierarchy. And people don't know how to act without it. Sometimes it is human nature to have some sort of a social order. Who do I respect? Who do I like listen to? And it's just the idea of being part of like, something exclusive. It's why clubs that are terrible, that there's a guest list. Ooh, now suddenly I need to be there.
Oh my God, what's it called? The club where people keep lining up? It's not a good preview.
Is it apartment? Are you talking about apartment?
I think it is apartment.
Oh God, no.
I've never been to, I was a big Kempai girl. That was like my club, and then they closed. So that put an end to my clubbing days. I was like, Kenpai close, I'm done.
I can say with certainty you are not missing out by not going to apartment. But it's the same kind of idea. Yeah. Like a little fresh froshy last year, seeing this massive line and being told by, you know, all these guys that I had just met about 2 weeks prior in Frosh, oh, like, I'm gonna be at apartment tonight. Like, do you need guest list? And immediately it's like, oh, this is a provider, man. He can get me on the guest list. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. Girl, it means nothing. It's just the idea that exclusivity thing, like, I don't know, it gets something crazy in people.
Yeah, which I think this is a good segue, but speaking about exclusivity.
Ooh, I'm excited.
The purpose of always rebranding things on TikTok that are very normal for the purpose of being, you know, very exclusive.
Yeah.
The one that I can think of that really, like, it pissed me off. Blueberry milk nails.
I can't even start how much this pissed me off. Like, I actually lost my mind.
Yeah. It's baby blue.
It's baby blue with, like, okay, it looks like a little, like, okay, well, there's like a kind of like a glazed coat over it, something like that. You're asking for baby blue nails with, like, a glazed coat. It's ridiculous. I don't know where this is coming from.
Oh, me, it was Copper Cowboy. During the summer, I had my hair be, like, reddish. Mm-hmm. Now it's, like, I know, like, there's no, like, visual representation. My hair is, like, a brownish.
Brownish. Do you mean caramel latte macchiato hair? Because that's,
no,
like, that's.
No, no, what... it's venti espresso.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's venti espresso, my hair color.
What? Like.
But yeah, I had red hair, and someone was like, I love your hair. I love that copper cowboy color. Oh, and I'm like, God. It's red. You can say that my hair is red because that's the color it is right now. My hair is red. Like,
don't get me wrong. I love a good trend. Sometimes I think it's fun. It makes me, you know what, again, it makes me feel a part of something, part of something bigger than myself. Everyone's part of it, and we're all having fun and relating together. But we have to ask ourselves, why are we giving names to so, like, and who are we, what are we doing? Why does everything need to have a brand?
The one that annoys me the most is when people say Sophia Richie posts something on TikTok.
Not this girl. Yeah.
Say, I don't know. She goes to a nail salon. She decides to get a purple color. Sophia Richie is getting purple nails. Therefore, I'm getting purple nails.
It's very Regina George-esque.
It's very, Sophia Richie parts her hair to the side. Now I can stop doing a middle part. I can now part my hair to the side again. And it's like, no offense. Do you not have a backbone? Like, just do things that, like, I wore a side part way longer than most people did because I liked having a side part. And then one day I decided to do a middle part and I realized, you know what? A middle part kind of suits me more. You don't need to do everything that other people... Same thing with, like, say Alex Earl. She, like, posts something and people will be like, oh, Alex Earl is doing it, therefore I'm doing it. Yeah. Or Sophia Richie told me it was okay to do this, so it's okay for me to do this. It's like, you don't need the approval of something, of someone or something for you to do what you want to do. Like,
this is what I'm saying, because... In the past, you know, celebrities were celebrities because they were fantastic in their craft. They were amazing dancers or actors or singers. And now we have people who are famous that we are listening to and following trends for what?
Yeah.
What did they prove that we should be taking their advice? I know this is making it sound like I'm horrible at parties and I can't have fun, but it's just, it makes no sense to me. It's like living your life in such a restrictive way. And you know, self-expression is so important. Finding what you like is so important, especially at this age, I'm using it, such a universal term. When you're a young girl, it's so important to try out what you like. And by putting yourself in so many boxes and giving everything a name, you're limiting yourself to what you can actually do. Because, oh, it's not fitting. And this is actually a call out to myself a little bit. You know, like the coquette aesthetic or whatever. Yeah. I was very into that last year. And if anything wasn't fitting that, it's like... Ooh, but that's not, like, giving what I need to
give. Oh, the amount of times I've been, like, trying an outfit on, I'm like, this is very old money aesthetic.
Oh, God, old money.
Don't get me started on the old money aesthetic. And then my friend would be like, don't you feel like that's weird giving a name to every single outfit you wear? And I'm like, huh, that is kind of weird.
Yeah.
And it also makes, like, your shopping just get so much more expensive when you're just, like, following what other people are doing.
Yeah. You know, who did I explain this to the other day? That you know, clothes used to be, okay, I'm talking like medieval times now. Clothes used to be that something like that was actually passed down in a will.
Yeah.
Like grandparents would give this to their children, their 10 most valued pieces of clothing. Please keep this and wear it.
Yeah,
and
or you'd have, like, to wait for your sister to get new clothes for you to get her old clothes so that you would get to wear them.
No, the micro trends are insane, you know. And this is, okay, I'm so passionate about this. I don't know what this, you know what? I've been looking for a major all these years. And if there's a major in this, someone please let me know, because I'm so passionate talking about, especially like the fashion culture. We follow things on a 20-year basis.
Yeah.
Like 2000s were slightly inspired by the 80s and vice versa, whatever, whatnot. Now, because of fast fashion, we're going so fast. We have already started wearing stuff from 2010, 2012.
I've seen that. Yeah. I've gone to stores and I've seen, oh my God, the skinny scarves.
Yes.
What else? The chunky necklaces.
Yeah, chunky necklaces. There's something like, even like...
the ruffle dresses.
Is it called Lamazo pants? They're more like shiny pants, something like that. Yeah. It's very like Vanessa Hudgens, like premiering like High School Musical. Like that's what she would have worn. And now we're wearing it. It's insane.
Yeah.
We've recycled it so quickly.
Or like, I've seen like on TikTok, it's like, oh, how to dress like a 2014 Tumblr girl.
Yeah.
You're going to need denim shorts, a graphic tee, you know, ripped thighs. And it's like, this is what I was wearing in high school.
Exactly.
I went to private school, but, you know, like outside of school, this is what I was like. I was wearing that like hipster, you know,
yeah.
The mustache,
the little alien on the corner. Oh, my God.
Owls.
Started. Yes.
Oh, my
owls.
God.
Just, you know, it's weird how we're becoming so quickly nostalgic for a time that was really not that long ago. Like,
yeah.
2014, like, hello, that wasn't even 10 years ago.
Yeah. It also stunts like any type of innovation.
Yes, because you're exactly.
Always like, I follow the fashion world.
Please tell me
the amount of times where I've just seen like, you know, collections referencing
yes.
something from the past. And I'm like, okay, I get referencing, like referencing is great, but are you really coming up with anything new? A brand that does this that really annoys me, Versace, the amount of times he brought out a new version of the J-Lo dress. And it's like, okay,
oh
we have
God,
beat this
I can't
moment.
Start with that dress. I'm so over it.
It's like, we have beat this to like all it could be.
We're beating a dead horse here. Like it's over. It's done. She slayed. It's over now.
Yeah. You don't need to reference that dress continually. Yeah. Like, you know, the one time you did it where it was a big thing where J-Lo walked down a runway.
Yeah.
That was good. That was good enough. You don't need to keep doing it 15 times.
I do. The thing is, I do love a great callback. I do.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. It's like respecting who came before you. You're wearing the dress that someone wore before you, but, and you know, little like hints of history behind you. But it's just like this and the naming everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, it stops innovation completely.
Yeah.
No one's thinking about what they actually like. What's something fresh and new? I want to see something fresh and new. Something so crazy. I want something that's so intrinsically 2023 that it could only be repeated in like 20, 30 years. That it's so like for
yeah.
the time.
Because that's the thing. Like, listen, 2010's fashion was abhorrent as as people who have worn it, like.
It was horrible.
It was horrible, but it was unique.
Oh, yeah. It was. That's what I saw. It was very, like, everyone's dressing a little bit like Lizzie McGuire.
Oh, no. For me, it was the return of business casual. Because remember, people used to wear, like,
yeah.
blazers with the peplum
yeah.
and the bun to go to the club.
Yeah.
And now it's coming back because people are wearing, like, I say this, I have worn an oversized blazer to class. Like
I have worn an oversized blazer to the club.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, it's coming back. And it's
coming
like,
back.
I mean, I get like wanting to stretch. Listen, if I buy something, I'm wearing it.
Yes.
I don't do like a $200. Like if I buy something, I'm wearing it until it
yeah.
can no longer be worn. And
yeah.
even then I'm going to try to patch it up because I don't like throwing away clothing. Clothing's expensive,
yeah.
especially now. Like, you know, back in the day you could go to H&M and buy, don't go to H&M, but you know, like at least if you were poor, you could get a decent haul for
yeah.
$200 at H&M. Now you can get like what, like four pieces?
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievably expensive. So, you know, like you try to make worth of what you have, you know,
yeah.
try reinventing your outfits, laying them differently. But yeah, it's just so annoying.
I was kind of going to talk about the Sophia Richie thing and the, you know, another person they use is like a little bit like Hailey Bieber. Hailey Bieber. They use a lot of her. And, you know, I was talking with my friend and we had this conversation about how every couple of years there's a push of conservatism and then there's a push of, you know, liberalism. And now we are so in the conservatism push because
yeah.
everything is, I've seen so many takes of how to dress modestly to attract a man. Not that dressing modest can be described as conservatism, but you're doing it to attract a man.
Do not get me started on the people on TikTok who their entire page is how to attract a man and like holding women accountable.
Yeah.
If I could get a PhD in it, which fun fact, I plan on going to grad school in communications. I'm seriously considering researching incels and the effect of incels on this like incel light, you know, the Fresh
yeah.
and Fits, the Pearl Davises. Do you know Pearl? Yeah. The
yeah.
Pearl Davises, he's dead now, but what's his name? Kevin Samuels
yeah,
of the world.
What's his face? No.
And you know what's so scary? The Andrew Tate's... And a thing that really scares me in the age of the internet, because this is what the show is about. I feel like a lot of parents, they sort of... They're very quick to just, like, give their kids an iPad without really checking what their kids are watching. Because the amount of young boys that are talking about Andrew Tate...
Yeah.
It's scary.
And you know what? So, clearly, as you know, we see from what we've even talked about today, people need a leader. Yeah. People need some sort of cultural leader they can look up to. And it's like something outside of your parents, you know, especially with the internet, you're on it all the time. You need someone that you're going to follow and listen to.
Yeah.
And it's just what does, and I know this sounds so stupid to analyze someone like where there's nothing behind his eyes. I'm analyzing something that's not worth analyzing, but what is, for example, Andrew Tate, what is he selling to boys that look up to him? I want, like, is it power? Is it
I think it's the lifestyle.
The lifestyle.
That is, like, sort of, you know, because here's the thing. Because it's the lifestyle of, like, I have all these sports cars. I have 20 women around me who constantly want to sleep with me. I have this big house. You know, I have an 8-pack.
Yeah.
You know, I have this life that if you're a man, you're taught is, like, aspirational.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, don't even, yeah, it's not just, that's a real life example. Then it's craziness now recently, like everybody's favorite character, when I say everybody, a man, Patrick Bateman, American Psycho, Jordan Belfort, Wolf of Wall Street. Like these are now characters that, oh, I'm so him. He's so me. What?
Yeah.
He's a psychopath. And Jordan Belfort was a horrible, horrible person. Like,
and the thing with American Psycho, they often miss like the, with media literacy, we've just gone out the window.
It's lacking.
Tyler Durden, Fight Club.
Oh, yeah. Which, again, it's so funny because, you're doing exactly what the movie is being, like, ironic about.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have to believe that they are doing it ironically. Like, you have to understand, like, especially American Psycho, like, literally the whole idea is that he's doing this to be all, like, macho and everything. And, like, you're supposed to see that he's not supposed to be that way. He feels so tormented. And you say, oh, that's so me. That's real. No. I don't know.
Yeah. I could go on a rant for hours.
This is a big one here.
Especially when it's women doing it. You know, like Pearl Davis.
Yeah.
She's big. And you know what the funny thing is? When you have people who, like, are actually smart and can debate them, you really see how much they're, like, shills.
Yeah.
For trying to get money. Because that's the thing. They're not giving you any, like, worthwhile advice. They're just trying to get your money.
Oh, yeah.
They're trying to get you to sign up to their course so that they can, you know, scam you.
See, that's what they sell. And this is what I have to believe. You're, like you said, they're selling the lifestyle.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially... It sounds so stupid because, again, it's like I feel like I'm analyzing something that's very, very simple. But in a bigger picture way, like, right now, given everything that's going on, inflation, et cetera, like... It feels like a very dead end. There's a lot of, especially anybody who's in school, like when you're younger, there's a lot that you know that there's a very great chance we all most likely will live a very average life.
Yeah.
And average income, blah, blah, blah. And they're selling something that it's like, look, you don't have to have that 9-to-5 lifestyle. That's a whole other rant I could get into as well. You don't have to have that 9-to-5 lifestyle. You can have the cars. You can have it all. It doesn't have to be traditional. You don't have to go to school. And it, you know, they're buying and selling this dream that it just... Yes, it can happen for some people, but not everybody.
Yeah. And I have to say, there's this quote, I think it's like, when you're privileged, oh my God, what is it? It's like, when you're privileged, the semblance of equality makes it feel like oppression. Mm. Something like that. The thing is...
Ah, that's good.
Okay. I think men have been very much like, listen, I don't want to like shame all men, but a lot of men for a long time, and they've been sort of at the top, and now you have people who are like sort of catching up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like leaves you in a state of like, well, what do I do? Because you have to be competitive for the first time in God knows how long for like a seat at the table when you've always had one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the one you're seeing it with is dating. I wrote a paper on this. But
really?
If you go on a dating app, men just swipe like crazy on women. And I think they get like something like 8% of like a match rate.
Yeah.
Because women are super selective because you can be now. You know, back in the day, it's like, okay, you married who, you know, your dad wanted you to marry. And usually it was like a good economic match because, you know, your parents are not going to let you marry like whoever. They want you to marry someone to be sure you're going to be taken care of. But now it's like you have online dating, which turns the dating experience like you're shopping on Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
It's very, very dehumanizing.
Like oh, yeah.
And it's very hard. You know, if you're single and you're like between the ages of say like 18 and like 35, I don't need to tell you that it's hard out there. It's hard. It's hard to find someone who you have like common values with, where you're like,
yeah.
And they're not, say, like, a horrible person, or, you know, you're not, like, three dates in and you realize that they voted for Trump, or, you know, like, it's hard. It's hard to find someone. So when you're sold the idea of, like, oh, hey, I can make it so that 20 women are around you constantly.
Yeah.
But they do that by, like, dehumanizing women. And that's, like, the really scary thing, because then people start to believe in it. And when women tell them, hey, I don't want you to call me a bitch. I just want you to like, when we're having a conversation, I want you to like actively listen and ask questions.
Listening. Oh my God.
And you know, I want you to be a decent person, and I don't want you to like, you know, follow 35,000 women who are like IG models.
Yeah. You know, that's a really tough one in terms of following IG models. I feel like it's a really complicated.
Yeah. But you know, it's a say like, I don't want you to, you know, I want you to send me a good night text and a good morning text. I want you that, you know, I don't know, once in a while you plan a date and we just go walking around the park and you buy me ice cream.
I've seen this on TikTok, and it's something funny enough. I actually talked about this with my mom, because it's funny. Like the story stays the same here. You know, I see a lot of guys on TikTok make the excuse of saying, well, you know, of the whole like not planning a date thing and not taking the initiative. It's like, because it doing the whole like equality thing, you don't want to overstep and say something like, you know, well, we're going to be doing this and this and get dressed and I'll pick you up at 8. They're very like, well, I'd rather just ask like what they want to do. And well, what do you have in mind? And it's like, I have seen something on TikTok now where women are just like, the whole idea though of being told like, be ready 8 o'clock, I'm picking you up, is so much more attractive.
Yeah. Cause I don't need to think about anything.
Yeah.
I just need to show up at 8 with clothing and everything is clean. I don't need to like call a restaurant.
No,
I don't
need nothing of that. You know, it's really weird because in some ways it's like, I do want, of course, like that whole, I want to be treated like an equal. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But the idea of being like cared for like that, it is, there's a role there that it plays that it's, it can't like, there is, and it's something that you would expect from a guy. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I'm crossing dangerous territory
here. No. I think it's okay to say sometimes that you want to be taken care of.
But then it's like, you know, if I'm asking for that, then by that logic, then I should be one time I should tell him, be ready at 8, I'll pick you up or something nice.
I mean, I think it's also sometimes we just lack the amount of, a lot. I think communication skills have very much gone down.
Mm.
If that makes sense. A lot of people are not really comfortable with the idea of just like, I'm going to say stuff straight up. I'm putting myself in this. I'm very aware that sometimes I'm horrible at communicating. My therapist has told me so, and I'm working on it. I'm working on being a better communicator. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to be straight up, to be like, hey, I don't think you're doing enough. Or like, hey, I want you to be spontaneous and to not see it as a personal insult.
Like we said it before about how guys struggle so much with being able to put their, you know, speak about their feelings in a way that doesn't feel like a struggle.
Yeah.
It's really difficult for them because immediately it's like when I'm expressing, I feel like I start getting awkward. It's like I start almost like morphing into their awkwardness of being afraid to show their emotions. It's a really odd spot to be in.
Yeah. And it's also sometimes guys are taught that like, if you're vulnerable with a woman, she's going to like use it to manipulate you.
Yes.
Some women do, but not all do. And like, it's a hard spot. Listen, it's hard being a man in 2020. It's hard being a person in 2023. It's hard being a young person and you're growing up and all the dynamics that were there are shifting and changing. Yeah. But this is what this show is about.
And that's what a fantastic wrap up. I literally feel like I have like 1,001 things that we said today that I could easily go into like an hour long rant about.
Yeah.
That's just more content for later.
Yeah, and this is why you had this show, and Adele and Zoe are going to be joining us, and they're going to share their perspective.
And I can't wait to hear it.
And we get to do this, I believe,
twice a month. I know everyone's excited. I can hear it now. The phone is about to ring, guys. Like, guys, don't worry, we'll be back soon.
Yeah, we'll be back, not next week, but probably the following week,
something like that.
Yeah,
it should be good.
Yeah. Next week is Feminism. You should listen to it. It's a great show. Ali's on it. They talk about, you know, underrepresented community in science, mostly women, which, I mean, it goes along with this show. So
it goes along with the show. It's a fantastic transition.
Yeah.
You want to end it with your,
song? My song, I'm going to play a few seconds of it. It's called Funky Thang by Shay Lia. And we will see you not next week, but the week afterwards.
The week after that. Bye.
CKUT. The following programming is taken from CKUT's Time Capsule Archives. For more from our 35 years of freeform broadcasting, visit our website at ckut.ca.
18 hammers fall in our lives. Lean on hammer in the ring line.
Funky Revolutions, for the fattest of the funk and other liberation musics. Saturdays 2 to 4 p.m., pure funk and the shuffle of people marching in the streets. On CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Everything I do gonna be funky.
Revolution, yo. Check it out, check it out, check it out.
For your mind and for your hips, you're tuned to the Mothership. This is the Mothership Cassette Archives, 25 years of funky revolutions. Today's episodes, we begin to present a series on the development of soul, funk, jazz,